Hello and welcome to Literary Loitering, part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. We are the Geek Show's dedicated arts, books, culture and general grab bag of things podcast. I'm Graham and this week I've been joined by Rob.
Hello.
Sarah.
Hola.
And Andrew.
Guten Tag.
Wow, very international, guys. I'm impressed.
Well, I figure lots of people should be on holiday right now and we'll try and fill that gap for them.
Yes, yeah, very true.
Yes, literally loitering. If you can't go to the holiday comes to you.
So we start every podcast these days with a bit of self-indulgence designed to alienate listeners. We ask, what are you reading at the moment?
And kind of Roberto? Sorry, do you want to go first, Sarah?
No. I was going to say Roberto.
Yeah.
In a Spanish way.
I'm back on my trash fiction binge. There's so much of it. I have been reading it's a bizarrely interesting series called Fields of Gold, and it's got nothing to do with that song by Sting.
Absolutely not.
No, it's got absolutely
disappointing.
Absolutely nothing to do with the song by Sting. It's about this Chinese woman who is born again, but in the past, in China, in like rural China, during an early time, and during that time, you know, everyone's starting to explore the world and everything like that. And she meets a couple of other guys who've also reincarnated, and they know that she's what they call a transmigrator or whatever it is, because it's not exactly like history of Earth; it's like an alternate Earth, and. These two guys have both become emperor, right? One was the emperor and took over the throne in a coup. And the other one is his son, who's also kind of a reincarnated transmigrator. And they both recognize her for what she is. And she's still trying to hide what she is because all she wants is just a quiet life. She doesn't want to get involved in any of the politics and nonsense and stuff like that. Because, you know, women at that time in China, probably not a good idea for them to get in politics. So yeah, it's a really interesting story because it's a lot of it deals with food and with crops and with planting crops and farming and stuff like that. So I like it from that aspect, and it's actually surprisingly well written. It's still trash, but it's just well presented.
It's well written trash.
Yeah, it's well presented.
It's good trash. It's trash that you'd be happy to feed to your pet raccoon.
Yeah, I mean, you know when you go to like London Fashion Week or one of the other fashion weeks, and you see,
do I
do every year, obviously,
and you just see people coming down the catwalk, and you go, "That's absolute rubbish." And then someone says, "But I bet you'd wear it." You go, "Yeah, damn right."
I have recently read a Hermann Hesse novel, which was his biggest seller during his lifetime, largely because I think the title is so much fun to say. I have read Nope.
That is.
It is the best title.
It's sort of a weird intermediary thing in Hesse's work between the coming of age stories that he wrote as a young man and the Buddhist allegories he wrote in his later years. And it feels a bit unresolved as a result. It's clearly the work of a man trying to think what his legacy is and thinking that, you know, if he keeps bumming around, not doing much like his hero does in this novel, he might die alone and unloved rather than, say, learning about Eastern philosophy and becoming the most beloved German author of his generation. But what are the chances of that happening, am I right? So it's pretty slender stuff, but if you are a Hesse completist, as I am, worth seeking out.
Very nice. I have had a quick read this week. I've actually got Das Kapital out of the library. However, I have not started yet because I'm still finishing off something else. But I've also read The Gashly Crom Tinies by Edward Gorey, and I'll put a photo of this up on our Instagram or our Twitter, is it? What do you think it should be?
Twitter, I think.
Okay.
We've got both.
We can do both.
Okay. So I'll put a photo of this up on Twitter and Instagram. And because it's just precious. It's nice, dark, spooky, awful things. It's an A to Z, and it's what's happened to various people, children actually, and how they died. So, for instance, B is for Basil assaulted by bears. a D is for Desmond thrown out of a sleigh, and my favourite N is for Neville, who died of ennui.
Oh wow,
lovely!
So it's just it's a stocking filler book, and it's really cute, and it's a nice journey during sort of Victorian Ed Warden spooky death fascination stuff. So I like that. It's published by Bloomsbury.
It's the kind of, it really sounds like the thing that Gomez would read to Wednesday.
Yes, absolutely it is. Yes, before moving on to the chapter labelled Scabs.
Yes.
Have you ever seen any of Kate Beaton's Edward Gorey stuff?
Oh, no, I have not.
She found a collection of Edward Gorey book covers and she tried to work out what the book was like from the cover. There was one which was a collected book of poetry by W.B. Yeats.
I mean, when you said Kate Beaton, I was thinking, not the same Mrs. Beaton, is it?
Not that one, no, the one in the Park of Vagrant. Yes, there was
I still feel like at least once a month I remember Kate Beaton's Great Gatsby comic and just have a little smile.
Yes, it's so great.
You'll so never be one of us, Gatsby. We're old money. How old? Old as balls.
So is Kate Beaton a graphic artist?
Yes, she's a cartoonist from Canada.
Mm. Oh, cool. Right, okay, mental note. We should put that on Twitter as well as a mention, because that, firstly, it'll tell people, it'll just remind people what we said during the show, and secondly, it'll remind me what people have said during the show, because my memory is hopeless. So.
Fair point, well made, yes. But I think what the Great Gatsby one is for Andrew, the W.B. Yeats one is for me. It's his Gorey's Yeats cover was just this heraldic eagle, and Kate Beaton just expands that into a sort of full documentary strip. People were surprised to find that W.B. Yeats was a giant bird. The shock lasted until they read some of his poetry and thought, no, fair play, this is pretty good.
For a bird. So Andrew, what have you been reading?
I have been back on my comics this week.
Cool.
Because the Humble Bundle, you know, that website where you can basically get a big old pile of stuff for dirt cheap. Mm. They did a big Image Comics collection, so I've been enjoying some of that. Specifically, I've been reading Snot Girl by Brian Lee O'Malley and Leslie Hung.
How have you started reading that? I couldn't figure that out after the first, like, after the first issue. I was thinking, I don't know what I'm reading.
So Snot Girl is very weird. It's about Lottie Person, who is a fashion blogger, but with a dark and terrible secret that she has allergies.
Yep.
So obviously it starts off being this whole big kind of wacky romantic comedy at first. I think it's listed as American manga, which as much as that's a term that does make my skin crawl, I think it is very apt.
Yes. Yeah.
It's that same kind of goofy, slightly slice of lifey thing.
Mm.
Except as the series goes on. So it obviously there is kind of the running through line of this idea of the image she presents online being very different to how things are in reality. And so I'm playing with the nature of perception a bit. That is actually something Brian Lee O'Malley did a lot in Scott Pilgrim as well.
Mm.
But as it goes on, Lottie, she kind of starts taking this new allergy medication from a doctor who is somewhat shady, shall we say.
A backstreet allergy specialist.
Yes, exactly, as like you get. And it begins to kind of delve more into this like weird psychodrama thriller where you're not sure kind of like, is Lottie imagining half the things that are going on? Like, are people dying and then just popping back up the next day? Who knows?
Excellent. Shall we move on to the news?
Yeah.
I think we should, because that is the format of the show.
Yeah, that's a good plan. Listeners, if there's one thing we can guarantee you to ensure that you have a top flight literary loitering experience, it's this. We are the first arts news podcast who are not going to mention that stupid Harper's letter about cancel culture, the writer of which we found out this week was so interested in free debate that he threw a man out of his house for disagreeing with him.
Was he my dad?
So, no, we stick to our general ethos that if you are talking about cancel culture all the time now, you are basically admitting that you are looking around the world in the state that it's in now and saying, you know what the most important issue here is? J.K. Rowling's lost a lot of Twitter followers. We know, of course, that there are more serious threats to human society at the moment, such as our first story. In November, we will see the release of Ernest Cline's Ready Player 2.
What?
Oh, God, no. We've been through so much already.
2020 just keeps giving, baby. We know almost nothing about it, which personally is the way I'd like to keep it. But pre-orders are open. It will be out on November the 24th. And yeah, the rest is speculation, guys.
November the 24th, isn't that about the time that we're predicted to run out of toilet paper?
Are the two related? Some say not.
Public-spirited as ever, Ernest Cline is helping us out with our coronavirus shortages. Right.
Personally, I think for my first trip to Toilet Town, I'm going to use the extended Manimal reference sequence that I just assume is going to be in there.
See, this is the thing. Is he actually old enough to remember things like Manimal and Automan?
Oh, I remember Manimal and Automan.
Oh, I think that's possibly the only way Ready Player 2 could get worse, if it's that artificial nostalgia for things you weren't actually growing up with.
Yes.
But have heard people like and want to cash in on.
Yeah. Stuff that happened 70 years before because nothing better happened in the intervening decades. You know, like us in World War II.
Yes.
We obsess over World War II. Always obsessing over World War II.
Now you mention it, the 80s obsession in the future society does make a lot more sense when you put it that way. But, I mean, releasing a Ready Player One sequel in this environment...
Hang on, it's a sequel.
It's a sequel, oh yeah.
Did you not spot that?
The title is very subtle, as is all of Ernest Cline's work.
In Rob's defence, I just assumed it would be exactly the same book, but everyone's costumes are different colours.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was going to say as well. Are you sure it's not just not the same story? I mean, you've done Ready Player One, so the virtual world is free! So, I don't understand, it's now free, and everybody is living healthy, apparently, allegedly, maybe. I seriously doubt it. So, where do you go from there?
Well, I mean, in this environment, it is the oasis, isn't it? It's the nonsense 80s nostalgia fest that you use to sink into when the outside world is completely crumbling. I hate that out of all possible futures, we are living in Ernest Cline's one.
Oh! What if somebody goes, no, the 80s weren't so great. The 70s, that's where it's at, baby. And Ernest Cline's done like 70s nostalgia instead. So it's 70s nostalgia versus 80s nostalgia. It's a fight on the streets between bell-bottom flares and shoulder pads.
I mean, genuinely, I bet like the villain is gonna be some I don't know, like Mark Zuckerberg type upstart whose evil plan is to make a new version of the Oasis, but based on brand new properties, not just referencing things from the 80s.
Yeah. I was just hoping for the Disco Boys to make a reappearance from after they were in Mystery Men.
I would actually approve of this if the Oasis was now full of lazy, obvious references to Ernest Cline's work. I think that would demonstrate a certain self-awareness.
Well, wasn't the guy who created the Oasis supposed to be a reference to him?
I don't know. All I know is that... But what I know about the guy who created the Oasis is that he was played by Mark Rylance in the film, and he had a very long and wisely cut dialogue in the book about how wanking makes you clever.
Yeah. Like I said, Ernest Cline reference. And he did do that poem.
Did do that poem, yes. A treasured literary loitering memory there.
I forgot what it was about. I just remember he did that poem and it was dodgy as hell.
It was about how...
I remember it.
Yeah.
I don't remember it.
He's... Basically, the thrust of it was that he's sensitive and intellectual because he doesn't like girls with fake breasts. He likes girls with glasses.
Okay,
yeah. He doesn't judge women by their appearance, except for the times when he judges them by their appearance.
Yeah.
A much more welcome comeback, and indeed a much more unlikely comeback, seeing as this author is, you know, dead, is Terry Pratchett.
Hooray!
Immediately, I'm sitting up straight.
Yes. Due in September, so, you know, just enough time to read it before Ready Player 2 consumes all of our attention. Doubleday Children's Books will be publishing the Time Travelling Cavemen short stories written for local newspapers early on in Pratchett's career, most of which have yet to be collected in book form.
Ooh.
Wow. Interesting.
Excellent. I have some new Pratchett to read.
Indeed, ooh. Yes.
Early career Pratchett as well. So this should be good. Because I think Pratchett's early career stuff doesn't get the kind of attention it deserves. There are a lot of things that he wrote during his early career. I mean, if you read stuff like The Carpet People and Diggers, Truckers and Wings and Strata. Strata and Dark Side of the Sun. And some of the stuff that he wrote as part of like anthologies as well.
Yeah.
With other authors. If you read some of those things, you can see the seeds of ideas that eventually became Discworld, for example. I think that was Strata and Dark Side of the Sun laid the foundations for Discworld.
This is incredible because it's almost exactly what Pratchett's editors Ruth Knowles and Tom Rawlinson have said in The Guardian about this. Yes.
I haven't actually read the article, so...
Yeah.
This is
bang on.
This is how much I adore Pratchett and how much I miss him, actually.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad because I know when you kind of posted the story initially in the group and just kind of seeing the title, I thought I was maybe worried it was going to be a bit of like a Tolkien thing.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, oh, we found this half-finished story that Pratchett had shoved behind the settee and we're just going to, like, I don't know, combine it with one of his shopping lists and that's something, isn't it?
Then again...
But no, it's actual work that he has completed and put out.
Then again, given Pratchett's humour, he probably did do things like put half the manuscript in, you know, on his desk and the other half somewhere that Rob has to find.
Well, it's funny you should mention this because I'd heard this story before but had forgotten about it until this article reminded me. But he made sure that his legacy wouldn't be, as Andrew said, Tolkien.
Yeah.
Because he collected all of his unfinished work onto a series of hard drives and then ran a steamroller over them.
Oh, that's right, he did.
Yes.
What a delightful man he was.
Yeah. Have you guys actually watched Good Omens yet?
I've seen a bit of it.
I've seen a few bits of it, yeah.
I have to say, there are bits that obviously they had to change for TV, but the relationship between David Tennant and Martin Sheen is just, oh, it's everything you want from Crowley Aziraphale relationship.
It is. It's like, it's a very small thing, but I just love that bit where Aziraphale opens the door, turns to Crowley and says, "Get thee behind me, Satan."
Oh, no, no. Get thee behind me, foul demon, and then after you. And the thing is, they've known each other for so long, and they've been frenemies, that's it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Frenemies, more friends than enemies for so long, because, you know, they don't fight each other whenever they meet. They just sit down and have lunch. And so they're more like an old married couple that's been around forever.
Mm. Much like David Tennant and Michael Sheen in real life.
Yeah. It's bizarre how that works, isn't it?
Yes. A rather less authorised spin-off next. There's going to be a sequel to The Great Gatsby.
What?
Yeah, I did think of several ways that I could introduce that story gently and sort of ease you into the context, but no, there's going to be a sequel to The Great Gatsby.
Again, what?
Right.
They have read The Great Gatsby, right? They know how that book ends.
Yeah.
It's spoiler alert, it's not so great for Gatsby.
Yeah.
No, the thing is that Fitzgerald's novel has beat on Boats Against the Current, Born Back Ceaselessly, out of copyright at the start of next year. Which means that Michael Faris Smith is going to publish his sequel suspiciously quickly, based around, I think, everyone's favourite Great Gatsby character, Nick Carraway.
What?
Yeah, the guy who just basically tells you the story and is a stand-in for Fitzgerald. We're going to get a bit of his life.
So, hang on, isn't that just bringing it to a more modern equivalent for a lot of people who may not have read The Great Gatsby?
Mm.
That would be like Lemony Snicket, right?
Yeah.
From a series of unfortunate events, someone writing a book about Lemony Snicket rather than the children themselves and narrating the story of what happened to them. They'd be telling the story of Lemony Snicket.
Basically, yeah. I mean,
you know,
who isn't
Nick
interesting?
Nick Carraway is basically the literary equivalent of a first-person shooter protagonist,
yeah,
where they're just completely devoid of any kind of noticeable traits, so that you, the player, can just imagine yourself in the role.
I mean, do we actually know what Nick Carraway looks like? I can't remember.
I love the idea of The Great Gatsby as a kind of first-person snobber.
I would so play this game.
Anyway, we all know what Nick Carraway looks like. He looks like Tobey Maguire.
Yes, I know.
I have not seen Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby, so because it's a Baz Luhrmann film, so I hope that this is true. But apparently, at the end of it, there's a shot where Carraway has written this memoir called Gatsby, and then he just pauses for a second and thinks and writes The Great on top of it and thinks,
yes,
yeah,
that's how the film ends, Graham.
Yep.
Excellent.
You know, I hope when the sequel gets an inevitable movie adaptation, it's just kind of interspersed with random shots of Leo DiCaprio just lying in a pool.
So yeah, that's a suspiciously quick turnaround, isn't it? Anyone might think that he'd been working on this before the novel went out of copyright, but no, yes.
Didn't you know all about the author's, you know, Gatsby fanfiction website?
I wonder what other novels are approaching leaving copyright.
Oh, that's a good question.
We can open our notebooks and make a start.
Yeah.
Well, Google is your friend.
It's quite an in-depth thing to know about copyright law. I suppose maybe when To Kill a Mockingbird leaves copyright, I can write a really bad sequel where it turns out Atticus Finch was a racist and... Oh, wait! Yes.
It's funny because that's an actual book.
Listeners may need a reminder that Go Tell the Watchman, her book which was hailed as the saviour of a bad year for the book industry, actually existed.
I mean, they need that reminder. I don't think they want it.
Yeah. I've got some of the books that are going out of copyright.
You have?
Yes.
Oh, brilliant.
Klaus Mann's Mephisto goes out of copyright, apparently, this year.
Oh, man, I'm sure there's a massive appetite for a sequel to that.
I don't know, maybe Marvel might want that. Oh, wow. Margaret Mitchell's Gone with the Wind goes out of copyright.
Oh, my God.
I would, yeah, we probably should write the book from the viewpoint of the Hattie McDaniel character, just clarifying the fact that she's absolutely sick of this white people shit.
Hashtag white folks is the title.
Finally, the Gone with the Wind Django Unchained crossover.
The March of Democracy by James Truslow Adams. Well, Truslow Adams, sorry.
I suppose there is a room for a sequel to that called The Retreat of Democracy.
I like how this Wikipedia list separates writers from novelists.
Wow, that's quite a diss, really, isn't it, in some cases?
It's got author, writer, and novelist. I'm like, aren't they all the same thing? Apparently not.
So well. is that what The Great Gatsby sequel is going to be about?
I suppose one can be a writer and not be a novelist. You could be a non-fiction writer.
Some of these books under writer don't look like non-fiction.
Oh, right.
I mean, what? Spiderwebs? Unless it's actually about spiderwebs.
Yes.
Anchor the Magnificent. Why does that name ring a bell? By Helen Churchill Candy, Anchor the Magnificent.
How do you spell Anchor?
It must be about Anchor what?
Are we just skipping over the fact that someone called Helen Churchill Candy existed?
Yes.
The product of a doomed marriage between Winston Churchill and John Candy.
I mean, what kind of a name is Truslow? I mean, James Truslow Adams.
Why did they all have three names back then?
It's an American thing, that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the sort of John Quincy Adams legacy. Say what you want for Harper Lee. That's a good short name.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe they wanted the double-barreled surname of the posh people, but they couldn't afford it.
I think that might be it, mightn't it? The American blue bloods trying to do something that they think is old world and failing. Yes. Speaking of American toffs trying to do something very simple and failing, Donald Trump Jr. has written a book while he's in quarantine.
Hang on. Another one?
Yeah, there was one before. I haven't looked up the title because I don't care.
It's called Triggered. I remember this.
Yes, it was.
Oh, Triggered.
Oh, we should have just gone for the most obvious answer and it would have probably been true.
See, I know what it's supposed to be about, but I really wanted it to be about Trigger from Only Fools and Horses and just be like Only Fools and Horses fan fiction.
Many argue it would have been a better book for it.
Just maybe it's one of the reasons why Trump finds Donald Trump Jr. a disappointment because of his massive fandom for Only Fools and Horses.
Apart from the literally everything else.
Yeah. I mean, most of the reasons why Donald Trump Jr. is a failure are things that I think his father would solidly approve of. Although, big shout out to that Chapo Trap House episode where they go to CPAC and hatch a plan to meet Donald Trump Jr. and just sort of put their arm around him and say, look, I get it, man. I just wanted my father to love me too.
I can't look at either of the Trump sons without thinking of Saturday Night Live.
Yes. Although Saturday Night Live, I think, always had that problem where at the start they assumed that Don Jr. was the strategist and Eric was the derpy one because he looks more like a bullfrog. But if anything, it's turned out the other way around. Don Jr. is failing spectacularly here. He's done a book which has a very interesting cover. There's like there's a picture of him looking sad, and then a bit of an American flag in the background, and also a bit of, I think, Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi, and then there's someone in glasses who I can't quite make out because it's all like layered over each other, and it looks, it's absolute visual mush. But
is that what, Giuliani?
I don't know. I can't imagine why it would be Giuliani, because he's a Trump loyalist.
Yeah, but again,
you're making the mistake of assuming that Giuliani makes sense.
Well, yeah, there is that.
And also that the cover has been proofread and examined.
Which it hasn't, because as everyone pointed out as soon as it came out, this has the old Gross's apostrophe on it.
It really does. God, that's starking standout.
It's called Liberal Privilege, subtitle, Joe Biden and the Democrats' Defense of the Indefensible, which it has that apostrophe before the S in Democrats, implying that he's talking about one Democrat in particular. Bets as to who it is, Keith Ellison, maybe. Don't know why I'd think Keith Ellison. But this has caused everyone on Twitter to roast him, and then everyone else on Twitter to say, oh, this is just performative, or it feeds into his narrative about persecution, or blah, blah, blah. And look, I mean, I get that this isn't exactly activism, making fun of Don Jr. on Twitter for having a badly spelled book cover. But if you could go back like 20 years into the past, if you could go back to mid-90s America and say, look, one day there will be this software that just allows you to make the lives of Donald Trump's kids and Alan Dershowitz a complete misery for their every waking minute. You would think that sounded like some glorious utopian future. And I'm happy to let people cling on to whatever makes them feel like that in these difficult times.
Yeah, and I feel like there's been a lot of discussion, especially recently, about Twitter not necessarily being the best place for these complex and nuanced political discussions. Mm. And if so, what should it be used for? That. Use it for that.
Yes.
Use it for God. Look at you, you gigantic dum-dum.
I have a question. It says on the cover, New York Times best-selling author. Right. Now, I know that's supposed to be number one.
Yeah.
New York Times best-selling author. But the hashtag just denotes that it's a number. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're specifically stating number one. It could just be one New York Times best-selling author.
A particular New York Times best-selling author.
Yeah.
You've actually hit on a truth there, because as several people noticed when that cover was dug up, the New York Times bestseller list that was published when Triggered was number one in the charts did actually have a dagger by Trump Jr.'s name indicating that the book was bulk bought in an attempt to manipulate the sales charts.
Why does that even surprise me?
Well, it's a Trump. He's going to try and manipulate the vote any way he can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would happily buy a book by Donald Trump Jr. if it was just like excerpts from his incredibly sexy Woodlands photo shoot.
No. No.
Did everyone see this masterpiece?
No.
Yes. Yeah, I have seen this.
Let me put a link in the chat.
No.
Donald Trump Jr., man of the woods.
He's going to make me look, isn't he? You're making me look.
No. Oh, my God. It's, yes, I remember this now.
No. Why can he not sit down?
Oh wow! And that first, that photo where he is actually sitting down on a tree stump just makes it look like he's done a giant.
I mean, he just seems very perturbed by all these wood at the buildings. Well, and there's some kind of art.
You see how new those boots are?
Yeah.
Has he ever walked in woodland ever?
Look at the photo of the giant tree stump. Trust me, look at the expression on his face. He's got that contemplative look on his face as if he's just had like a continental bowel movement and now he's just glimpsed Nirvana or something like that. And Kurt Cobain's going, no, you're not allowed here, mate.
He's had a revelation of some kind.
It's like those clips on The Simpsons where it just zooms into Homer's brain and it's like him singing the Meow Mix jingle or something like that.
Oh, someone's done an amazing picture where they've taken that tree stump photo, but then they've cut out him and made like tiny versions of him. One's perched on his shoulder, another one's perched on his knee, and another one's perched on the rest of the tree stump. If you can find it, it's amazing.
There's one of the that shot of the photo with him on the stump set alongside one of Prince's album covers where he's naked.
Oh, yes, Love Sexy, yes.
But, yeah.
Except the opposite of both those words.
I don't think I've ever seen a picture of a man who is more being told, look contemplative, without knowing what that word means.
It's like the old thing that they tell you in drama school, isn't it? Never, ever direct an actor to just walk normally. Because you can't do it when you think about it. And someone has clearly said to him, just sit normally. And he sat there going, how do humans sit?
Have you seen its sister photograph?
No.
Well, it's of him in the same outfit in the middle of a field. But the field it's like trimmed burnt grass, really.
Yeah, it's empty.
In the horizon, it's just purely white above that, like the mists rolling in or something. Like it's some kind of metaphor for mental health.
It sounds like the picture that was taken of him just after he arrived on this planet.
I'm looking at this and I'm remembering a line from a TV show Stacey Keach used to be in where he's drunk and he says to his son, you better swim for the lighthouse, laddie, the fog's rolling in.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we engage in that wholesome country sport known as hunting for mount weasels?
Yes, you know it.
Is this anything to do with cat weasel?
Sadly, no.
Because I was going to say he's a beloved character from my childhood, and we shouldn't touch him.
Yes.
Oh, but you're not going to like Ready Player Two, then, Rob.
Yes. The novelist Ellie Williams has been collecting mount weasels as part of the research for her debut novel, The Liar's Dictionary. Now, mount weasel is something like. I'm saying this as if I don't know that a lot of you are Doctor Who nerds. Let me pretend that I don't know if anyone has heard of the concept of trap streets before.
Of what?
A trap street is a fictitious location put on a map by cartographers in order to prevent copyright theft. So if a map is copied and it includes one of these non-existent streets or parks or whatever, they will know that it was ripped off their map.
Ah.
Right, yes. Okay. So it's
obviously I've heard of that, Graham.
Yeah, it's...
After all, who doesn't know it from hit coming-of-age Cara Delevingne indie drama Paper Towns?
Of course, yes. I knew it from the Doctor Who episode Face the Raven, where, spoiler warning, it turns out the trap streets are all real and they're secret alien refugee camps.
Okay, I didn't remember any of that from any Doctor Who episode or Cara Delevingne's, wherever the hell that was. I completely misunderstood what you meant by trap streets, because...
Yeah, you did. You just thought it was where you can go to get a little quote-unquote pick-me-up. But yes, some of the Mount Weasels. The Mount Weasel, by the way, was named after Lillian Virginia Mount Weasel, who herself was a fictitious entry in the 1975 edition of the New Columbia Encyclopedia. She was supposedly a photographer born in Bangs, Ohio, who was killed in an explosion while on assignment for Combustibles magazine.
This sounds like a plot from a Pratchett novel.
It does a bit, doesn't it? Yes. Williams points out that these things go under the radar because obviously no one is going to be specifically looking them up, but she admires the creativity put into them. The 1943 Webster's, for instance, defines Jungfertak as a Persian bird with one wing that can therefore only fly when attached to a mate.
Oh, that's cute.
Yes. it has a long and noble lineage. The very first dictionary by Dr. Samuel Johnson defines Trollmadames as, "Of this word I know not the meaning."
Okay.
At least he's honest.
Yeah.
I mean, if that was an option, I should have made my own dictionary ages ago.
Yeah.
I just remember the Blackadder the Third episode.
Yeah.
Where it just ends with him going, "Sausage! Sausage!"
Damn your eyes!
I think it seems like there's some sort of... I mean, you think of dictionaries as, like, rigidly factual. And it's always a surprise to hear something like this. I was delighted. I used to collect dictionaries when I was a teenager.
How lonely. That's cool. I like that.
And one of them was the Ambrose Bierce Dictionary, which just, you know, made me laugh, had a lot of brilliant definitions in it from a couple of centuries ago. So maybe there was like... I don't know, maybe getting to the stage that it is today is an evolution rather than, you know, you have a dictionary, it's factual, and that's the end of it. Maybe there was a crossover between the centuries.
Perhaps, yeah. It's kind of like how, you know, newspapers from America in the 19th century were full of silly made-up stories about axe handles coming to life, and newspapers in America in the 21st century are full of silly made-up stories about Hillary having a brain tumour. It's all progress.
It's good we've moved on, isn't it?
Yeah. Finally, before we move on to the quiz... The quiz?
Yes.
Quiz!
A little snippet from Twitter. The writer Cameron Chi, who works on Late Night with Seth Meyers, tweeted out, "For once, I'd like to read a book where the acknowledgement section isn't there to thank people, but to call out nemeses who have wronged the author." To which Calix Palmer responds with a tweet from that most exciting of academic texts, "Rotational splittings with Corot expected numbers of detections and measurement accuracy."
Ah, that is one sexy book. Whew.
Itself a sort of a kind of Mount Weasel, really, isn't it? Because nobody is going to read that paper expecting something like this at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The acknowledgements in full run: "We gratefully thank the Programme National de Physique Stellaire for financial support. We do not gratefully thank T. Apashaw for his useless and very mean comments."
Dues. Good that you've put that in print. Nice that somebody has a comeback. You know, very often they sort of say, "Oh, just ignore them," or two wrongs don't make a right. But I like that. I think it's fair enough that he had a response to that, or she had a response to that.
Academic clapback is what we're looking at here.
And it can't be the first time that that an author or a writer or somebody has put something like that into a paper or a book or something like that.
Yeah, there must be others. And if you know of any listeners, we'd love to hear about them.
Yeah, definitely.
I love the idea of the acknowledgement being like, thanks to all the wonderful support from my friends and my family, and up yours, Steve. I'm crying a bitch.
Right. Quiz?
Yes, quiz.
Brilliant.
So this is something else with a silly name, isn't it? A phenomenon with a silly Mount Weasel-style name.
Is it? Am I doing the quiz or are you doing it?
Well, I thought we were doing a quiz about misheard lyrics.
Yes, we are. Yes, yes, we are.
Often called Montagreens after someone...
Yes, they are.
Yeah. After someone misheard a lyric from a folk ballad that said, I believe, they took his body and laid him on the green, as they took his body and Lady Montagreens.
Excellent. Just a random additional corpse.
So, anyway, I've got 10 particular ones, which have... there are a lot of misheard lyrics, and I had to stick to ones that were, I was reasonably sure you probably were already aware of what the song was, otherwise it would be pointless.
Yes, yeah.
So, and I mean, there are some really, really easy ones. There are some that are ridiculously easy, like We Built This City on Sausage Rolls.
Yeah,
it's
by the rivers of Babylon.
So there's really easy ones like that. These ones I think are a little bit trickier, but you know, you should still be able to get which song they are. So okay. Starting off with Dreams of War, Dreams of Lies, Dreams of Dragon's Fire, and of Baked Apple Pie.
Is it a heavy metal tune?
That would be giving it away, so...
Ah, so it is.
Yes.
Not necessarily.
Well, it's not Bewitched.
Sorry, I've just got like a group of denim jumping around going,
Dreams of war, dreams of peace, da-da-da, da-da-da.
That might be why I've got it in my head that this might be some kind of 80s pop thing. You know, there was that moment in late 80s pop where everyone thought, why don't we just sing childish gibberish? You know, like Dean Jesse by Madonna. What the hell was that?
Or war is stupid and people are stupid, unquote.
Thank you, Mahatma Gandhi, there.
Sorry.
Anyway, I will take a punt on War Pigs by Black Sabbath.
Okay.
I cannot think of anything that fits my stereotype of this as a kind of twee 80s pop thing. I probably am going to say Dear Jesse by Madonna, even though I can't map that onto any lyric.
Yeah. Actually, I think my alternative answer would be The Riddle by Nick Kershaw, but I think that's just going to be my go-to for any of them.
Well, on the grounds that they also produced the lyric, You're About As Easy As Nuclear War, I'm going to say Duran Duran.
Ah,
and it's, like Rio or something.
It's actually, the correct lyric was Dreams of War, Dreams of Lies, Dreams of Dragon's Fire, and of Things That Will Bite. It's Enter Sandman by Metallica.
Oh, no, that was actually in my brain. Oh, man.
But the thing is, when you scan it and you go, and of Baked Apple Pie. Yeah. Are you okay, Sarah?
We're killing Sarah.
Sorry. Oh, dear.
Right, okay. So that's the kind of, that kind of sets the tone of things to come.
Okay.
So, I remove umbilicals.
Prefab Spout, King of Rock and Roll.
Oh, it could be, but I mean, it does sound like a Prefab Spout lyric, so.
Is it Toto Coelho and I Eat Cannibals?
Oh, it's so close, isn't it?
Yeah, that is good.
That's a really good guess there.
I will guess at I Remember California by R.E.M.
Hot Chocolate.
Which one by Hot Chocolate?
You sexy thing. I believe in miracles.
From Billico. Where are you from? That is not an appropriate situation to chat someone up.
Oh my god.
Also, surely you should know exactly where they're from. You've just seen them come out.
Right. This one should be fairly easy. Or Dyslexics on Fire.
Oh, Kings
of
Leon.
I think I know that one, yeah.
Yeah, Kings of Leon.
Yeah.
Right. Kick a Chicken with It.
Ooh.
Oh, I think I've got that, actually. Is that Will Smith back in his DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince days doing Getting Jiggy With It?
Oh, yeah, that sounds like it.
I think that is the correct answer.
Yep, it is.
Yeah.
A completely different song when you replace Getting Jiggy With It with Kick a Chicken With It.
It's the spitting image version.
Right. We Don't Need No Sex Vacation.
I'm guessing. I think that might be Pink Floyd.
Yes, yeah, I think that teacher definitely needs to leave those kids alone.
Yeah, it is another brick in the wall, part two. Right, I got my first real sex dream.
In the summer of 69.
It works on so many levels. I think that's, yeah, summer of 69.
Yeah.
I mean, that one I would go out on a limb and say definitely not Nick Kershaw's The Middle.
Right. The Girl with Colitis Goes By.
Yeah, I think I know what that is.
Yeah, is that Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. I mean, again, a very different song. It's a very different song.
Yes.
Right, okay. This one, right. Tommy Why, Ain't Nothing But a Fart Hay, Ain't Nothing But a Meat Steak.
It's nothing but a meat steak. Ain't nothing but a...
I don't know how you cook your steak to get it into a meat safe. But I will, no, say,
meat,
I will say, Rob, that I want it that way.
Oh, of course. Was that Backstreet Boys,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was. Ain't nothing but a fart, hey? right.
I want a meat safe.
Well, that sounds like an absolutely filthy euphemism, doesn't it? It's from the same people that brought you the summer beef closet.
I don't know where you got meat safe from. I clearly said meat steak, didn't I?
Yeah, it's better with meat safe, I think.
I stand by the meat safe.
Keep your meat safe with new Vanguard.
Yes.
As advertised by the Backstreet Boys. No, I can't. Right. Might as well face it, you're a dick with a glove.
Straight away, you know what that is, don't you?
I remember reading this in an article about Mondegreens, and the person who had misheard that explained it by saying, I just thought he was dissing Michael Jackson.
To Robert Palmer and Addicted to Love.
Yeah.
Right. A nice, easy one to finish. You should be able to get this. The Algebra Has a Devil for a Sidekick.
Again. It's the Has a Devil for. That's just direct, directly the same.
I mean, there are a bunch of students out there who are struggling with mathematics, going, this is so true. This is so true.
So Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
the Asmobus put aside for me.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever had any particularly egregiously misheard lyrics themselves?
I was thinking about that Queen song where everybody yells fried chicken at the end. Yeah. And I don't know whether it isn't fried chicken.
I don't think it is fried chicken.
I mean, that does matter because I have actually had a similar one of mishearing the lyrics to Lizzo's Juice as blame it on the goose.
Going, yes.
Oh, that's silly me. It must obviously be blame it on the boose, as in caboose.
Caboose.
As in her rear behind. Except actually, no, it's goose. Goose is the correct word.
And unknowingly, there was, what was that? That song that went Bicycle Hot?
Oh God, Bicycle Hot.
I can sing it if you like.
Oh, please do.
Bicycle Hot, la la la. Bicycle Hot, 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 hot. Bicycle Hot, we'll always love you.
I know exactly what song it is and I can't conjure up like anything about it other than, oh yeah, Bicycle Hot.
It's My Simple Heart by the 3 Degrees. In my defence, I was only little at the time.
Sarah, the fried chicken thing was from Queen's One Vision, right?
Yeah.
I've just Googled it, and on the Wikipedia article it says, fried chicken. The final line of the song in the studio live and blurred vision versions in the album and extended versions, the line before the final God works in mysterious ways, is fried chicken, although the lyrics say one vision. This was the result of trying to come up with the proper wording of the song, and since it was not working, Freddie Mercury at some point introduced words that had nothing to do with the song for fun.
Uh-huh. Oh, didn't the Beatles used to do that as well?
Yeah.
Yes, the original version of Yesterday, before Paul McCartney got the lyrics down, went scrambled eggs, oh my baby, how I love your legs.
Handy as placeholder words.
Two that I particularly love. There is a Taylor Swift approved Mondegreen.
Is this the Starbucks lovers?
Blank Space, yes. Where people frequently miss here. Got a long list of ex-lovers as all the lonely Starbucks lovers. The one that this is probably the thing that I'm proudest of in my life, even though it's a completely idiotic accident. But when I first heard the song Neat Little Rose by Elbow, whose chorus line is "Lay my bones in the cobbled stone," I genuinely thought they'd said "Lay my balls in the coleslaw."
I mean, it's niche, but...
It was a time when a lot of indie bands seemed to be singing weird shit. What can I say?
Yeah. Shall we end this then?
Perhaps we should.
Because I am very aware that Andrew does need to disappear.
As his bicycle is too hot.
Indeed.
Right, okay, so if you want to catch any of our previous episodes, you'll find them all on our website, our new and shiny website, thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll also find all of our other episodes and all the other shows that are on our network as well. You'll also find reviews of various films by Graham and also by Classic Film Kid and quite a few others as well. You'll find stuff related to video games that are on YouTube, and we do all sorts of stuff on YouTube as well. So have a look at those, and if you want to show your support, there's a link to our Patreon at the top of the page. So do check it out. And yeah, that's it from us. Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Sarah.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Graham.
And we will see you all later.
Thanks for listening.